Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take the source material you share with us, articles, research, your own notes, and really dig in to pull out the essential knowledge and insights.
It's your shortcut, hopefully, to getting up to speed on sometimes complex topics.
Today, we're diving into a stack of sources from one of our listeners. What have we got?
We have a detailed legal paper. Looks like it was presented at a Texas bar seminar, and also some key excerpts from Texas court opinions. There's a really significant Texas Supreme Court case in the mix, too.
Okay, sounds quite specific. Legal paper, court opinions. What's the mission for this deep dive?
Well, the goal here is to unpack what these sources tell us about a very particular, but honestly critical aspect of Texas civil litigation.
Which is?
How you actually prove and challenge attorney's fees. You know, when a contract or statute says the loser pays the winner's legal bills, we're looking at the nitty-gritty rules and the evidence you need.
Right. And I took a quick look at these, and my sense is it's not just a matter of showing your final bill and saying, pay this.
Oh, far from it. That's really clear from the sources. Judges have to take a close look, a really close look. And the rules for proving your fees are, frankly, pretty demanding. It's often where these claims stumble.
Okay, so let's start from the top. In Texas, when can you even make the other side pay your attorney's fees? What's the general rule?
The general rule, not just in Texas, but across the U.S., is what's called the American rule. And basically, it says each party pays their own lawyer bills. Win or lose, you cover your own costs.
Okay, that's the default. But obviously, there are times when that changes.
Exactly. Those are the exceptions. Fee shifting, as it's called, happens when a specific statute, a law passed by the legislature, or a contract between the parties specifically authorizes it.
So you need explicit permission from a law or the contract itself?
Precisely. Could be certain types of contract disputes, specific consumer protection laws, things like that. The sources don't list every single one, but they stress you need that specific legal hook first.
Got it. And these sources, they focus mainly on how you prove the amount once you've established you are allowed to ask for fees.
That's right. Getting authorization is just step one. Step two is proving the amount, and that's where it gets tricky. The core requirement is that the fees must be reasonable and necessary.
Reasonable and necessary. Do those mean different things? Do you have to prove both elements?
Good question. The sources suggest that even if a statute just says reasonable, the courts generally interpret it as needing proof of both reasonableness and necessity. You have to show the work was needed for the case and the amount charged for it was reasonable.
And who decides that?
It's a question of fact for the judge or the jury, based on the evidence presented.
Okay. Now, there was another term mentioned in some statutes, fees must be incurred. What's that about?
Right. Incurred. It means you've actually become liable to pay the fee. You owe it to someone. And this leads to a really interesting point, highlighted in several cases the sources mention. An attorney who represents themselves pro se, they call it, generally cannot recover attorney's fees under these statutes.
Wait, really? Even though they did the legal work, spent their time as an attorney?
It seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? But the reasoning from the courts is that they haven't technically incurred a fee in the sense of becoming obligated to pay another person or firm for legal services.
So it's about the liability to pay someone else, not just the value of the attorney's own time.
Exactly. It's a fine distinction, but one Texas courts have consistently made, according to these sources.
Okay, that's a crucial point. So assuming you're authorized, the fees were incurred because you hired a lawyer, how do you prove they're reasonable and necessary? This seems to be the core issue.
It absolutely is. And this brings us right to a landmark Texas Supreme Court case mentioned prominently, Romo's Venture. This case really clarified, and you could say mandated, a specific method for proving fees.
Which is?
The Lodestar method. Romo's adopted and clarified this method as the standard approach, applying it broadly in fee-shifting situations.
Lodestar method. Sounds technical. It's complicated.
It's a structured approach designed to bring some objectivity. The sources break it down into two main steps.
All right, let's walk through it. Step one.
Step one is calculating the base lodestar. This is your starting point. And significantly, this base amount is presumed by the court to be reasonable.
Presumed reasonable. Okay, how do you calculate it?
You multiply the reasonable hours worked on the case by a reasonable hourly rate for the person doing the work. Mm-hmm. Simple multiplication, but the key is proving those two inputs, hours and rate, are reasonable.
Reasonable hours times reasonable rate. Got it. That's the base. Presumed reasonable. What's step two?
Step two involves potentially adjusting that base lodestar figure up or down. But, and this is a big but, Only if certain factors are presented that are not already accounted for in the hours worked or the hourly rate used in step one.
Ah, okay. So if the case was super complex and that complexity justified, say, a higher hourly rate or more hours worked in step one,
yeah,
you don't get to add more in step two just because it was complex.
Exactly. That's the no double counting rule the sources emphasize. Adjustments in step two are meant for genuinely rare and exceptional circumstances, and you need specific evidence for them. The real fight, usually, is over getting step one right.
And this is where the sources get really detailed, right? On what you actually need to show for those reasonable hours and reasonable rates in step one. Saying, we work hard, isn't enough.
Definitely not. This is probably the most critical takeaway.
Mm.
Rormuz, and the cases following it, cited in the paper, spell out the minimum evidence needed. You have to show, let's see, five key things.
Okay, lay them on us.
One, what particular services were performed? Not just legal research, but, you know, researched enforceability of non-compete clause.
Specific tasks, got it.
Two, who performed those services? A specific partner, associate, paralegal. Their experience level matters for the rate.
Okay, who did what?
Three, approximately when were the services performed? This helps gauge timeliness and context.
When the work happened, makes sense.
Four, the reasonable amount of time required for each specific service. This is crucial, not just total hours, but time per task.
Time per task. Wow. Okay.
And five, the reasonable hourly rate for each person who performed those services.
Each person's specific rate. That's incredibly detailed.
It is. And the sources stress that general conclusory statements just won't fly. The Rormuz case itself is the perfect example.
What happened there?
Well, the attorney testified his standard rate was, say, $430 an hour. And he estimated that maybe 750 to 1,000 hours would be reasonable for a case like that one. So, you know, maybe $300,000, $400,000 in fees.
Seems reasonable enough, stating a rate and an estimated range.
Right. But the amount they were actually asking for was over $800,000. Even the attorney testifying called that amount ridiculous.
He called his own fee request ridiculous.
Apparently so. His justification included broad descriptions searching millions of documents, taking more than 40 depositions, drafting long motions. Big picture stuff.
But the Supreme Court said that wasn't good enough. Why not? He listed major activities.
Because it was still too general. It didn't connect those activities to the 5 points we just listed. How much time was spent specifically on reviewing those documents? Which lawyer did it? What was their rate? How much time for each deposition prep and attendance? It lacked that necessary granularity to connect the work done to the final number sought.
So you need that detailed breakdown, task by task, person by person.
Precisely. And the update paper mentions other cases tossed out for the same reason. An affidavit just listing rates and generic tasks.
Oh.
Not enough. Lifting total hours, but not who did what, when, or the time per specific task.
Yeah.
Also not enough. It keeps coming back to that granular detail.
Man, that puts a huge emphasis on record keeping. Which brings us to billing records. Are they actually required now? Like, do you have to submit timesheets?
Interestingly, Rormuz didn't say contemporaneous billing records are strictly mandatory. You could potentially prove those five elements through detailed testimony alone.
What?
But the sources make it crystal clear they are strongly encouraged, especially if the fees are being challenged, which, let's be real, they almost always are.
Why so strongly encouraged? What's the benefit?
Well, they are the best evidence. They provide the documentation to back up testimony about those specific tasks, who did them when and for how long. They allow the other side to meaningfully cross-examine, and they help the judge or jury assess reasonableness.
Makes sense. What if lawyers try to redact parts of their bills, black things out?
That can be a real issue. The sources mentioned several cases where fee awards were reversed because the bills were so heavily redacted that the court couldn't tell what work was actually done. If you can't see the service, you can't judge if it was reasonable or necessary.
So too much black ink can sink your claim.
It can. But the sources also note some redaction is okay, like to protect genuine attorney work product. If there's still enough detail in the remaining entries for the court to do its job, it's a balancing act.
Okay, so nail down the base lodestar with hyper-specific evidence, ideally detailed billing records. What other major points did these sources cover?
A big one is segregation of fees. If your lawsuit involves multiple claims and you can only recover fees for some of them, you generally have to separate out the time spent only on the recoverable claims.
You can't just bill for the whole case if only one claim allows fees.
Usually not. You have to segregate. There's an exception if the work is inextricably intertwined, but that's apparently hard to prove. Also, a key point from the paper, If the other side doesn't object specifically to your failure to segregate a trial, they might lose the right to complain about it on appeal.
Interesting. So you have to raise that objection clearly. What about fees as sanctions? Like if a judge penalizes someone for bad behavior by making them pay fees?
Same standard applies. Even if awarded as sanctions, the fees still have to be proven reasonable and necessary using that Roemu's lodestar approach. And the evidence has to show the fees were caused by the specific bad conduct being punished. Plus, the sanction itself has to be just.
The standard seems pretty universal then. Anything else stand out?
Yeah, there was a case about the role of the person getting fees, like distinguishing between a guardian ad litem and an attorney ad litem.
What's the difference there in terms of fees?
The evidence has to match the role. If fees are awarded for work as a guardian ad litem focused on the ward's best interests, the proof needs to show guardian work, not lawyer work, like legal research or arguing motions, which is what an attorney ad litem would do. The fee has to match the service proved for that specific role.
Makes sense. Prove what you actually did in the capacity you were appointed. What about the judge's power here? Do appellate courts just defer to the trial judge on the fee amount?
They have discretion, sure, but it's not absolute. The award has to be supported by evidence meeting the Roemu's standard. One source mentioned a case where an appeals court actually reversed a huge reduction in fees because the evidence did support the higher base lodestar amount.
So it cuts both ways. Insufficient proof means reversal, but sufficient proof should be respected.
Generally, yes. Although just taking judicial notice of typical fees might not be enough on its own in some contexts.
Yeah, what if the side opposing the fees just doesn't really fight back on the evidence presented?
Ah, that's a crucial point from the paper. If the party asking for fees presents their evidence and the opposing party doesn't file a specific challenge like a controverting affidavit or declaration pointing out problems, the court might just presume the requested fees are reasonable.
Wow.
And get this. If that happens, the trial court might actually abuse its discretion if it denies the fees anyway without any contrary evidence. Silence isn't just golden. It might be acceptance in this context.
So if you want to fight a fee request, you absolutely have to put up specific objections or your own evidence.
That's the takeaway. You have to actively engage and controvert their proof.
Okay, this is a lot. Specific authorization, fees incurred, lodestar method, granular proof, segregation, maybe billing records. What happens if a party tries but just fails to provide this level of proof? Is their claim for fees just dead?
Not usually, actually. The most common outcome when the proof fails is that the appellate court reverses the fee award, but then remands the case back to the trial court.
Remands, meaning send it back.
Exactly. Sends back specifically for a new hearing just on the attorney's fees. It gives the party who failed the first time a second chance, basically, to present the proper evidence under the Roemu standard.
So you often get a second bite at the apple on proving fees.
Often, yes. That's what happened in Roemu's itself and many other cases cited. But the sources do caution it's not automatic. One case mentioned upheld a trial court refusing a second chance when the party just completely dropped the ball initially.
Okay, so don't rely on getting a do-over.
Probably wise. And even if you get a remand, it doesn't automatically mean you can claim fees for the appeal itself or the work done on remand, unless the appeals court explicitly says so.
Got it. This has been, well, a true deep dive into some very specific rules. If we had to boil it all down, what's the number one practical takeaway from these sources for lawyers and clients in Texas dealing with fee recovery?
It really comes down to meticulous record keeping from day one. The practice pointers in the update paper hammer this home. Keep detailed, itemized time records throughout the case. Even if it's a contingency fee case and you're not sending hourly bills.
Why even in contingency cases?
Because if you win and are entitled to fees from the other side under a statute or contract, you still have to prove those fees using the lodestar method. Your contingency agreement doesn't replace the need for that detailed proof. General estimates, lumping tasks, vague descriptions that usually won't cut it. Detail is king.
It sounds like proving up the fees requires almost as much precision as litigating the case itself.
In many ways, yes. The documentation has to be there to support the claim effectively.
Okay, let's wrap this up. The clear message from these sources is that proving attorney's fees in Texas civil cases isn't just submitting a bill. It's a demanding legal process requiring specific, detailed evidence under the Roemu's lodestar framework. Generalities just aren't enough anymore.
Exactly. The bar is set high, and the sources show plenty of examples of parties failing to clear it.
Which leaves us, and you listening, with a final thought to chew on. Given how rigorous and, frankly, potentially expensive it is to prove attorneys' fees properly under this standard, how might these rules impact the decision-making process for litigation itself? Does this detailed requirement make it harder to actually recover the true costs of winning a lawsuit, potentially discouraging valid claims? Or does it effectively filter out excessive or poorly justified fee requests, protecting litigants from inflated bills?
It's a really interesting tension with big strategic implications.
Something to consider. And yeah. That's the deep dive for today.